My friend Porter is in the first grade. He's a lively sort, the kind of kid that moves around constantly. His teacher thinks that he's not paying attention, but evidently Porter can multitask. In his daily routine of squirming and wiggling, he does some listening. The other day at a restaurant in the town where we live, he had a conversation with his mother that went something like this. "So," Porter asked, "what was it like for those brown people in the olden days? Could they have lunch in this restaurant?" "What brown people?" his mother asked. "I guess you don't know anything about a man named Martin Luther King," says Porter. "He came to help people that were sent away from restaurants because they were black or brown." "Oh, yes," responds his mother, "those brown people. And I do know about Martin Luther King, because Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement made us able in the country so that all of us could eat in the same restaurants or go to school together or even talk together on a public street." Porter said, "What is a brown person? What do brown people look like?" "Well," responded his mom, "brown people or mixed race people are like your cousin Chloe. Chloe is mixed race. You would not have been able to eat lunch with Chloe in a restaurant in the South before Martin Luther King marched with all of the people to make things better for the brown and black people in the United States. His work and his words made a difference for a lot of brown and black people and for all of us." "This makes no sense," says Porter. He was very animated in what you would call an outside first grade voice, perfectly audible to the black family in the booth on one side and the Puerto Rican family in the booth on the other side. "What difference does it make? And why are we called white? I'm not white. Look at this. This is not white. And what do you mean I couldn't have lunch with my cousin?" "No," says Mom. For the rest of the mealtime, she explained that things were different before Martin Luther King. And she and her six-year-old expounded on historical race politics in the wake of his first lesson on Martin Luther King Day. Porter was frustrated, determined to understand, and determined to make sense of what made no sense to his mind, no sense whatsoever. Peter thought that all the brown people were pretty much more like peach colored, and he could not justify elimination from a restaurant booth based on a flawed color scheme. But the work of Martin Luther King did make an impression. He knew that his choices for how he was going to live and with whom he could associate had been changed by this man. And he certainly did not have any intention of keeping his questions or his opinions to himself. Out loud and with certain voice, this child keeps us in mind of proclamation. Whether he intended everyone around him to hear or not, Porter's questions were a public announcement, even celebration, that in these United States of America, we are still working at being open for business for all people now for 150 years. In this month of January 2013, we remember the Emancipation Proclamation and celebrate the fact that segregation makes no sense at all, none to a first grader, and he can tell it out loud. Sent to proclaim. Our text this morning is from Luke 4 and from Isaiah. It's familiar to many of us. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because God has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. God has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." This is a text that is often chosen by people for their ordination. It is a text that Jesus himself used to announce his entrance to his ministry of teaching and healing. It seems to be well suited to a kind of calling out, words that define a special set of amazing tasks to rejuvenate and uplift those lost and hopeless, wandering or incarcerated. God has sent me points to an acceptance of being chosen to bring a good word or be that particular person sent with a message of release. This passage has initiated good works and good ministers, the beginning of Jesus' challenge to his own world and the wounded who were not of his own world. This passage has ordained 12 ministers and stirred all of us in spirit. And I wonder today if we can take a page from history and reclaim proclamation for all of our lives. For all of our lives and words and our works, as we imagine new ways of setting free those who are still captive. When I began thinking about this text and remembering that this year marks the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, I was set to celebrate the anniversary of one of the most significant legal mandates of our country. But after reading a bunch of different things and thinking, I have to admit that celebration of this proclamation is no easy thing. The work of Emancipation Proclamation is the beginning of freedom, just a bare touchstone of not 150 years of hard work, but maybe more like 2 millennia of living into the work of releasing the captives. President Lincoln's plan was set to save the Union, not so much a race of people tied to subservience and poverty and subhuman definition. When the proclamation was enacted, not all of the slaves were freed. There was a gradual implementation of the proclamation to 1865. And as we know, slaves were not free to citizenship, nor was that ever a part of the initial intention. The proclamation was rife with the fear of Negro revolts and violent repercussions, of which there was none. The history we are bound to forget is that emancipation, a political order from a U.S. president who longed to save his country, began an ongoing process on that day 150 years ago. Sent to proclaim. The proclamation business is hard work. We also remember, some of us, that 50 years ago in 1963, there was a march on Washington, D.C., sponsored by the Civil Rights Movement, where hundreds of thousands of people appeared in D.C. at an event keynoted by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., who reminded the USA, because it was broadcast and proclaimed across all of our sets, in that centennial year of these words. 100 years later, the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society, in exile in our own land. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. America has defaulted on the promise of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. End quote. In the meantime, 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, President Lyndon Baines Johnson was still working hard on the Proclamation of Freedom, signing orders for voting rights and overseeing a public revolution. The media was full of people moving, marches and speeches and demonstrations, obstructing the status quo and pounding into submission centuries-old oppressions, lifting voices of hope and the content of dreams. Sent to proclaim. In the secular and political world, we look to our elected leadership as change makers, the movers and shakers. I would like to submit that we will be waiting another pair of millennia for release of the captive if all of us do not step up to the work of freedom making and make it our own, as individuals, as citizens, as the faithful, as the tasks of Christian community. I submit to you this late January morning in the 150th year following the rollout of the evolving release of the captive in our own society, that there is more work to be done. And it takes not judicial legislation, protest marches, or speeches calling out dreams and visions, but the hard work of making with our own hands and feet and intentions and goodwill and generosity a difference in the place where we live. I am offering that all of us in this moment need to re-engage with the acts of freedom making and captive release by proclamation and engagement with the people in the seats and the people in the streets around us. In Connecticut, some of you may know, just before Christmas, we saw once again the massacre of children, first graders, just like my friend Porter. First graders are people who are learning the world and attaching meaning to history and value and to their lives and relationships. I don't know how many of you know any first graders. I have several as best friends. They keep me on my toes. Talk to the children. Listen to them. Help them understand their choices. Help them negotiate the strange and predatory world of communication in which they are being raised, where they are learning and getting their values. Give them yourselves a place and a person to express their concerns and fears. First graders are a scary lot, but they begin in this early year with their education to create worlds out of their understanding that make sense or no sense. It is up to all of us to keep them captivated and interested, not captive and afraid. On campuses like this one, and in college towns like this one, and also in the place where I live, we see people who are from all over the world. We hear language that we do not know. We sometimes shy away from ways, religious, cultural, families, that are different from what we know and understand, and from what makes us comfortable. But be like Porter. Ask questions of people. Be on the lookout for things you do not understand, and do the hard work of understanding. Do not allow fear to rule your definitions. Jesus sat amidst the people in his own hometown in the temple in which he was reared and announced that he was called out to proclamation. He was doing a new thing. I have to ask all of us to consider that we have many better resources, the best kind, and the best kind of abilities to step out and assert our own power of proclamation. We are all equipped to set out with new words of proclamation, acceptance, and hope for ways to live in the world. There are thousands of historical figures over the centuries who have stepped out of the mainstream and up to the possibilities of freedom making. Some of the people I've been reading about and studying are names that will help you recognize the kinds of things I'm asking you to be about. Oh, people like Moses, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, Harriet Tubman, Lyndon Baines Johnson. All of these follow in a great line of release to the captive workers. High standards for sure. Check out their bios if you want and pick up some pointers and get to work helping to set folks free from the hard circumstances we have designed to circumvent life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In the beginning of his ministry, Jesus appoints himself as leader of the movement to proclaim release, preach good news, recover sight, and set free the oppressed. But at the end of his ministry, we are all on board. Remember these words? I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. These, my friends, are our acts of proclamation. Not so much legislation and dark of night escape, but more like the welcome table and the presence of a good, caring friend. We can do this proclamation thing. It is not a challenge, but an invitation, a reminder. The Spirit of the Lord is upon all of us. In the end of the story with my friend Porter and his mother, Porter learned more about Martin Luther King. Porter's mom is from Memphis, so he'd been there many times, and he's a person who, for most of his 6 years, had a dedicated interest in garbage trucks. Porter's mom told him that Dr. King ended his work of helping people by marching for the garbage workers in Memphis. "Memphis," he cried, "you're kidding. Why don't I know about that? I should have known that. Well, I'm going back to my class and tell them that Dr. King helped the garbage workers in Memphis. I've been there in Memphis, and I want them to know." My first grader has no hesitation whatsoever to proclaim what he knows loud and clear. And we can do no less. Hear these words of proclamation and blessing. First from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. "There is no easy way to create a world where men and women can live together, where each has their own job and house, and where all children receive as much education as their minds can absorb. But if such a world is created in our lifetime, it will be done in the United States by people of goodwill. It will be accomplished by persons who have the courage to put an end to suffering, by willing suffering themselves rather than inflict suffering upon others. It will be done by rejecting racism, materialism, and violence that has characterized Western civilization, and especially by working toward a world of brotherhood, cooperation, and peace." From Audre Lorde, "We must transform our silence into action. It is vitally necessary for each of us to establish and examine the way we function in the world to bring about transformation." And finally, please pray with me these words of blessing from the Reverend Dr. James A. Forbes. "God of love, power, and justice, who wills the freedom and fulfillment of all of your children, we thank you for the constancy of your loving kindness and tender mercies toward us. Because our needs are so great today and your care is so constant, we know that you are rebuilding the network of compassion around new visionaries who you have assembled for this hour. Surprise us with the discovery of how much power we have to make a difference in our day, a difference in the way citizens meet, greet, respect, and protect the rights of each other. A difference in the breadth of our vision of what is possible in humanization, reconciliation, and equalization of our results in our great cities. A difference in the way government, business, and labor can work together for justice and social enhancement. A difference in our response to the needy, and a difference in our appreciation for those who give up themselves for the surviving and thriving of all of our people. Help us to spark new hope and stir up our passion for new possibilities. May compassion and the spirit of sacrifice be the new mark of affluence of character. Strengthen us to face reality and to withstand the rigor of tough times in the anticipation of a bright side beyond the struggle. Inspire, empower, and sustain us until we reach the mountaintop and see the future for which our hearts yearn. This is our fervent prayer. The Spirit of the Lord is upon us. Amen.